Hey, you want that to go?
Now, some quick takeouts on stories we're following all this week. We're going to go to Capitol Hill first. Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick is out this whole week, and filling in is our good friend Julie Mason. She's the White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner. So, Julie, today is the day. The Senate Finance Committee is voting on that bill today. It's going to pass, most likely. But obviously there's a question of whether Olympia Snowe is going to vote for it or not, which would mean something, I guess, according to how the bill will pass in the full Senate. But we're also going to talk about this report coming out of the American Health Industry plans. They are blanketing the TV with ads about these reports that they've come up with on the costs. What have they supposedly found, and who are they trying to reach here?
Well, the timing is very key with this report. It's a trade group, and they're claiming that what's being proposed in Congress right now would raise everybody's rates like crazy, and it would just pass all incredibly high costs onto the consumers. And so they're trying to stir up some controversy ahead of this debate. And as these bills get ready to hit the House and Senate floor, they're not going to influence the Senate committee vote today. They're looking down the road. They want people to get upset and excited and call their congressman or congresswoman and say, "Don't vote for this. This is a terrible measure." And that's what they're hoping to
do. But this is basically numbers coming from the health insurance industry,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Right. And the White House was so exercised about this yesterday. They were calling it a distortion and saying it was flawed, and they were very upset about it. But in this debate, consumers aren't really sure who to listen to. And if they're happy with their insurers and their insurers are saying this is a bad bill, well, that's going to be a voice they listen to, even though they may know on some level that these industries are very self-serving.
So here is the director of the White House Office of Health Reform.
I think, though, that maybe they've gotten worried as we get close to really getting reform done. They've gotten more worried about their profits.
As you said, the reaction from the White House was swift and strong.
Well, the White House really thought that they had brought the industry along. They wanted to avoid the mistakes of the Clinton administration and make sure that they had all aspects of industry on board with this so there wouldn't be any of these final hour mutinies. And so when this did come up over the weekend and yesterday, the White House was sort of acting like a spurned boyfriend. You know, like, hey, I thought you were with me and now you don't like me anymore. And oh, so it's kind of funny to watch them in a tailspin.
Well, I don't think it's going to, as you say, it's probably not going to affect the vote from the Senate Finance Committee at all today. Julie Mason, thanks so much. She's the White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner. We're going to move on to business now with Louise Story, finance reporter for our partners, the New York Times. So, Louise, a big trial coming up. This is the first one. This trial dates back to the two Bear Stearns hedge funds that failed in 2007. And some people say that was the beginning of the whole economic meltdown, right? So what is this case about?
Morning, Celeste. This case is huge because we really haven't seen any Wall Street guys in handcuffs. And, you know, there's a lot of anger out there, a lot of feeling that Wall Street misled us all about what they were doing in the mortgage market. These two hedge funds at Bear Stearns specialized in mortgage bonds, and they owned a ton of the subprime mortgage bonds. So they're on trial for telling their investors that their hedge funds were doing just fine, even as they were writing emails to each other with their fears. Listen to this one. In April of 2007, one of the guys, Matt Tannen, went on his personal Gmail and he wrote the other leader of the hedge fund, Ralph Chaffee. He said, "The entire subprime market is toast." And then a few days later, he told his investors in a conference call, "We're very comfortable with exactly where we are."
Oh, wow.
So these emails are kind of damning.
I bet so. So, I mean, obviously they're going to be able to enter these emails into evidence showing a clear disparity between what they were telling the investors and what they were saying to each other. This is what the first trial, as we said. Are we going to see some more people getting charged?
There are a lot of investigations going on. There haven't been so many indictments. If you don't have juicy emails like that, you know, not everyone writes that kind of stuff in their Gmail. If you don't have that kind of email trail, it's a lot harder to prove these cases. It's a lot harder to prove that people knew something they weren't telling their investors. But, you know, one thing we've been talking about on the show a lot is this case against Bank of America,
right,
about losses at Merrill Lynch. And that centers on the same issue. And that issue is, what do you have to tell your shareholders or what do you have to tell your investors? If you're worried about something, do you need to tell them? And this Bear Stearns hedge fund case is right around that. It's about how positive can you be and when is optimism actually a lie? So it'll be very interesting to watch.
Okay, and I would imagine there's a lot of people that didn't realize that their personal Gmail accounts could be subpoenaed, and they're, I guess, maybe frantically going through their archives to see what they wrote. Thanks so much. That's Louise Story. She's a finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times. And now on to sports. It's time to play Tuesday Morning Quarterback with Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen. Good morning, Ibrahim.
Good morning.
So, Monday Night Football, Miami Dolphins, the New York Jets... The Jets,
who have the best rushing attack and best rushing defense in the league,
right?
Went up against the best rushing attack, and basically the Dolphins ran well, but they threw the ball better. They brought in young Chad Henne, who was 20 for 26 with 241 yards and 2 touchdowns. A couple takeouts in this game.
It was a squeaker. First of all, Miami only won 31-27.
Precisely, and it was 5 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. That means that the lead changed more times than in any recent memory with a Monday Night Football game. But there was the most important part of this game, there was no turnovers. This was mistake-proof football. It was excellent football. It was the best kind of football that you want to see with two young quarterbacks playing and two excellent defenses. It was a really beautiful game.
So maybe it was just showing that maybe the best defense and the best rushing, which one wins? I mean, maybe that settled that argument.
And in the very end, the Wildcat formation, which Miami uses, which is a very difficult formation for defenses because it tightens up the defense. It tightens up the offense. So a defense like the Jets has less lanes to run into. So with 10 seconds left on the goal line, Miami going in, the Jets trying to stop them, 3rd and inches, boom, the Wildcat offense pushes through, and that was the end of the game in Miami. It was really exciting.
Okay, so now on to Major League Baseball. It was like 40 degrees in Denver. You think that would play to the Rockies' strengths? They're used to that kind of weather, but they went up against the Phillies, and the Phillies beat them 5-4.
Exactly, and the story of this one is not that Cliff Lee pitched amazing, because he did. It's not that Josh Howard hit an amazing hit in the ninth inning. Not that they even scored 3 runs in the ninth. It was all about Brad Lidge, who everyone was worried about as a closer, who everyone was like, oh no, the Phillies aren't going to do well. Brad Lidge has come through, and now the Phillies are legitimate. They play now, again, as they did last year, the Los Angeles Dodgers in the National League Championship Series,
on
the NLCS,
Thursday. Exactly,
on Thursday. And so that's going to be a great
rematch.
Who are
you predicting?
This is the thing. I think that because Brad Lidge is back, in terms of closing with authority, I think the Phillies have the edge
if
in this one.
If he can sustain it.
Correct.
And we've also got the Los Angeles Angels. They're going to play New York, the Yankees.
Who you don't
Friday.
Like. No.
I like the Angels fine. I'm going to predict the Angels. Are you predicting the Yankees?
Listen, this is the thing. This is a year of amazing things happening, and the Yankees are going to slay the ghost of their Angels, you know, with the Angels. They're going to beat the Angels.
Okay, Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, our Takeaway Sports contributor. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you.